online, offline, bottom line. Sendoff.net.
Welcome back, everybody, to Sundog the Podcast. It's the show where we talk about everything related to marketing plus technology. And hopefully by the end of today's show, we'll give you something that you can take away that will help improve your company's bottom line. I'm Lon Keller, Senior Editor here at Sundog Studios, and you're listening to episode number 23. We're going to call this SEO 101. And joining us around the table today is Mr. Jason Rasmussen. How you doing?
Good.
How you been?
I'm great.
Welcome to the show. First time on the show?
Yes, I'm excited.
Super. Sitting next to him is Dean Frosley.
Hello.
How you doing today?
Very well, thank you.
And we're going to welcome back to the show Mr. Nick Green.
How you doing, Nick? I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Super.
Fantastic.
Well, a few weeks ago, Jason Rasmussen came to me and he had an idea about doing a show on SEO, search engine optimization. And Jason, we'll start off with you then. Can you just kind of give us an overview? I mean, what's the big deal about SEO?
Well, the big deal about SEO is that everybody's using the internet and using nowadays to find things. Search is a big deal. Over 15 billion searches are performed every month in North America, according to ComScore. So there's a lot of people out there searching for products or information. You know, majority of people start their day with their internet experience with search. 85 to 90% of people. So people even go in and search for the company itself. So if they know it's target.com, they'll still go into the Google search and type in target.com to get there.
Guilty.
Yeah,
I'll do that too. I do it and I go, why did I do that?
Yeah. So, you know, search engine, especially Google, which is the market share leader, I mean, is just everybody Googles everything. I mean, that's just everybody starts there.
And we'll talk about the importance of being on those first results pages, but that's where everyone wants to be, and that's the goal here.
How has SEO grown? You know, from when people first started taking an interest in this, and how has it progressed? What technologies have come into play throughout the years?
Oh, SEO has, you know, it's interesting. That's why when I came back to you with SEO 101, because SEO has grown so much with different things as far as social networks, viral, and everything else that's going on nowadays with Twitter and other Facebook and other viral methods and social networking. But yet it's amazing the amount of companies that still have a website that don't optimize themselves and just the regular basics of SEO. You know, like I said, SEO 101, which is going back to the keyword research and sprinkling that throughout using targeted keywords throughout their site and in their basic metadata and, you know, title tags and header tags. So that's why I think it's so important to get back to the basics and look at that, because people still aren't optimizing to that level. They want to go for the heavy hitters, which is the brand new stuff and targeted what's hot and what's going on in the world right now, where sometimes you got to start at the ground level.
I think another big aspect of this is just local search. A lot of your big companies have optimized their sites well, they have great rankings, but the reality is a lot of people are searching for their local businesses online, and within local search there's huge opportunity, because as Jason mentioned, very few sites have been optimized, and maybe you're a restaurant down the street and you're hoping to get higher rankings for related searches in your town, and with a few small steps, you can have some huge rewards in that area.
I think that's a great point, because a lot of the times, what Google and Bing, even as they're popping up and trying to pretend that they're the next big thing, they're really pushing the fact that they can do local search, that they'll be doing it localized based on your IP address, and Google just added that a few weeks ago. But I think even more, once you get beyond that, you kind of get to this new level of complexity that's gotten there, with so many people having figured out how to cheat the different Google ways of detecting whether or not you're a legitimate site. So you start getting all types of development tools and all those kind of things that have new and improved ways of just customizing each individual page towards this particular message.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Dean, with a local search, because, for example, my mother always brings me over telephone books every year when she gets an extra one, and I just take it, and when she leaves, I throw it away, because who needs a telephone book when there's the internet? So, I mean, I Google everything, especially even around town. If I'm looking for a local business, I just go and search for it. And to Dean's point, a lot of these small businesses in town are, they're getting a website. Yeah, I'm a new restaurant in town. I got a website, but I'm not optimized so people can't really find me. And especially if they're not indexed in like the yellow pages or anything else like that, where that can, if you do a local search, a lot of times the yellow pages will pop up. But if they're not indexed there, or if they're not anywhere, if they're not optimized in their site, they're not going to show up. So you have a website that's, somewhat useless at that point.
I think another aspect of this too, in terms of the evolution of SEO, is we've sort of been through the initial attempts to optimize for sites, and we've seen all the black hat techniques and things that Nick referenced earlier.
You might want to define black hat for a second.
Right, yeah, black hat is just unethical or ways of I guess cheating your way to get better rankings, and a lot of those tactics have been detected now by the search engines, and they've gotten smarter about it, and now you're sort of seeing a return to SEO fundamentals through content and keywords and having search friendly sites and all those kinds of things too. Mm-hmm. So it's really sort of come back to, there aren't any tricks here. A lot of it's just coming down to a lot of good web fundamentals.
And another thing too, online, like you're saying, how things have progressed too, is everybody nowadays is looking for that flashy, that splashy site. And if you have a true flash based site, spiders don't read flash. They read HTML, they read text like humans do. So a lot of people today too are trying to incorporate the biggest, baddest site out there with the flash and all these neat things. But if they want to be ranked in SEO, they can just kind of count that out if they're going to base their whole site on flash. And I know Nick maybe can speak to that a little more too.
Yeah, certainly. It, I think, has added a new level of complexity in that we found ways, even with flash, to make that readable. That's been one of the big pushes from Adobe, was that their product was useful still. Obviously, they need to have that be indexable by Google, and there's been a couple releases where Google says, now we can parse Flash, and they still haven't really kind of continued any of those programs on. There really hasn't been any time where those programs have actually produced results they're bragging about. So it's actually oftentimes come down to doubling the cost of a website that was full Flash, because we also needed to create something for the search engines to read.
Is Adobe working on this on their end?
I think on both sides, Google and Adobe have a pretty good partnership, it seems, in the sense that the SDKs on both sides have been released multiple times. I'm not too sure exactly why Google hasn't been able to break the code on this one yet, given that the code was literally handed to them on a silver platter.
Right.
But I think right now it's probably just not a big priority for them.
There have been some strides made in other areas, though, with indexing PDFs and things like that. It's better, but there's probably still ways to go.
Right.
We talked about, we threw the word optimization out quite a bit so far. What are some of the actual steps that people take to get their site optimized? How can they make their site more relevant?
Well, first you start by looking at a couple of things. This all basically starts with the keywords you want to use, or the queries that people are going to find you. How they're going to find you. So you want to look at your the strategy of your site, and then look at your what your competitors are doing, and also using some keyword research tools on what are people actually searching for, how relevant to your content. And you really need to establish a good number of keywords for your site that are, and I say keywords, but it can be 3, 4, 5 words in a search string, because now I've even seen some stats that people are searching up to 8 words in a query at a time. So it's not no longer just one word like shoes. Mm-hmm. It may be yellow running shoes or something like that. And so what you want to do is establish a good base of keywords, and then you got to start figuring out, okay, how can I use that in my site?
And part of that then goes back, since that the target has become a little bit broader, in the sense that you can't just address shoes anymore. You have to address white shoes, red shoes, all these different types of brands like Nike, Adidas, and also trying to grab that traffic. That now it goes back down to those fundamentals of web development as well, where you have to make sure that you know, any images that contain text, maybe they don't contain text anymore. Maybe it's overlaid, and that we start really utilizing CSS and the up and coming CSS3 to actually do the majority of any text-based imagery so that we can kind of make sure that everything is parsable by Google.
There's really a sweet spot with keyword selection where you want to choose terms that where you can make an impact in rankings. You don't want to choose software, you know, just as a broad term, because it's unlikely that you're ever going to make an impact in rankings there. But if there's something a little more targeted, something that's just a lot more relevant to what you do, you definitely want to strive for those types of keywords and key phrases.
Yeah, like shoes, you're never going to compete on the term shoes. Mm-hmm. And that's another thing I look at too is the competitiveness of the word. So, you know, how often is it searched? Who's competing for that keyword? How does it relate to your website and the strategy of your business? And then how can you work it into your content so people can, so the search engines can spider it and find it relevant?
Now, these spiders that you talk about, when they're looking for the keywords, are these keywords ones that actually appear on the site that people see, or are they embedded in the code that are not visible to the user?
Both.
Well, do they have to be both?
No. And I would say
it would be both, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, more and more, it's really kind of had metadata as a whole really has been knocked down because of that abuse that Dean referred to earlier with the black hat and such. Mm-hmm. So there's really not as much precedence put on that, or not as much importance lent to the metadata. So most of the information does have to be visible to the consumer in order to be visible or important to the spiders.
Yeah, back in the day, if you want to say such, when SEO first started, the big deal was having meta keywords, and you know, which is code kind of behind the scenes where you can't see it. But that's where people would abuse it. They would repeat keywords, you know, multiple times, so that would rank higher, or they would take a term and add a bunch of other terms to it, so it'd be red shoes, yellow shoes, blue shoes, and they just load their keywords up. So even like, you know, there still is meta keywords in behind the scenes, but I mean the search engines don't even really use that. But yet the title tag or the page title, which is a metadata, is very important. That's one of the most important things you can have for search engine optimization is a good title tag that has the keywords or a couple keywords for that page. And then also the page description, the meta description for that page. So that's what search engines use to describe the page that's being displayed on the search engine result page. If you don't have that, Google will go in, or especially MSN or Bing now, and Yahoo will go in, and then they'll try to find words on the page if they can and put it together as a description. And so it's nice to have that description that you write yourself with targeted keywords that people are looking for.
Okay. Yep, definitely control what's within your control with the title tag, which appears in the upper left corner of your browser. That's maybe one term that may be unfamiliar to some of the listeners, but yep. The title tag appears up in the upper left corner of your browser, and it also is the clickable link that displays in search results.
Correct.
So those are the two areas where it's really important.
Yeah, so I mean the important part is, you know, the title tag and the and the page description, and then the content. I mean, the content is king when it comes to SEO, and you want to make sure that you have good quality content. But if you don't have that page description, it can be interesting of what Google or what the engines think is a description of your site. I've seen some pretty interesting descriptions out there of when you type in a search.
Or what the search engines will do is index navigation, and so you see a meta description that says home and then all your product links and everything, and that's certainly not selling this page or your site like you would want.
Or if it's a heavily flash-based home page, it will say, you know, flash unreadable, or it has some other kind of error code.
Skip intro,
yeah.
And that's if we do it wrong, yeah. Other things that definitely show up in the content of it that are sort of hidden, and it does seem to be probably the last remaining loophole, are those alt tags and those title tags that go with links and also go with the images. And those are what you get when you're in Internet Explorer and you hover over the top. That's a little tooltip that'll pop up there. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, most people aren't seeing those. In Firefox, if you scroll over an image, you're not going to get anything. So a lot of times these are ways that you can still load up things, kind of back in the old days, the way we used to shove all types of keywords everywhere. That's really your best vestige to shove that in there.
Is there an organization that provides a set of guidelines or best practices, you know, to avoid the black hat situations?
On the ethical side, I'm less familiar with any like industry movements or anything, but Nick could probably speak more to just some of the web standards and things that allow your site to be very search friendly while being accessible and et cetera.
Yeah, and each one of the search engines actually do have a guide specifically how to show up higher on their website, how to be properly indexed. And a lot of them have submission tools even so that you can actually submit your URL to make sure that you're being introduced to the world correctly. But each individual sort of search engine does try and do a little bit of preaching about what the science behind this thing.
Okay.
But there doesn't seem to be a whole lot of a consumer movement yet.
No, there's no industry or there's no organization that I'm aware of, but there's a lot of, everybody has their own opinion on SEO too. You'll see a lot of different varying opinions on what's important, what's not, but there's some sort of consensus out there on major things, like I said before, you know, content, paid description, title tags, but everybody else, you know, a lot of consultants, everybody's trying to sell their services and their opinions and their ideas on how, what's the best way to do it. But again, like Nick said, you know, Google, who is basically the search king, definitely has a good outline and good descriptions, and they do try to walk you through how to optimize your site for their search engine.
But yeah, at the same time, they don't disclose exactly what's most important, and there's a lot of secrets behind the vault here that we don't know. And
exactly,
the algorithm.
Yeah, they're constantly changing their algorithms, and if people try to, you know, crack the code, like Nick was saying, or you try to, you know, get how do I get number one in Google, and the Google's always changing their algorithms and how they search and trying to, you know, it's to improve themselves. So trying to figure that out is kind of a waste of time. It's like, again, it's going back to the basics and it's doing everything you can to improve your site and to make sure it's just it's listed well.
Google is obviously the 800-pound gorilla in all of this, so I'm assuming that's where you look first to find out what, you know, what they're looking at when it comes to searching those keywords. How much does it vary from search engine to search engine? How much do you need to tweak the code to go from Google to, say, Bing?
It's really sort of a results game at that point. I mean, Google, the information that Google provides or MSN provides or Yahoo provides is really quite vague. I mean, when it comes down to it, it's not going to all of a sudden give you the holy grail. If you follow this, you're going to show up on the top page, because a lot of companies still need to realize that they're not the top 10 in the world at what they do.
Right.
So there's that kind of minuscule group of words that they actually are best at, and they need to focus on those. But when it comes down to how they show up on different websites, it's still a guessing game. No one actually knows exactly what weight's given to each individual thing. There's a lot of people out there who are going to tell you that they know, and I think Jason brought up a really dirty word, those consultants, which and search engine factories and all these places that are definitely going to, you know, promise you to get you on page one. Time and time again, they've proven that they're really just a waste of money.
Yeah, and each search engine has their own way of, or their own algorithms too, and how they build their search. So that's how you're gonna see different listing or different rankings between search engines too, because they're all searching in a different method and their algorithm. So, but like you said, the 800-pound gorilla, Google, everybody's targeting that one first, mm-hmm. and the other two are kind of more of an afterthought at times. Because, you know, you want to be number one in Google. That's the goal.
Okay. Let's move on to pay-per-click and organic. Can you kind of describe the subtle differences between the two?
Well, if you put the two together, that's search engine marketing. Mm-hmm. You'll hear that term a lot. Search engine marketing is a form of marketing on the internet that to help promote your website. And again, it comes down to paid search and organic search. Paid search is where you actually are bidding or putting money up for the key term that people are looking for. Mm-hmm. And then the search engines will serve up the ad that you create. You create little ads, text-based ads. You know, if you type in yellow shoes and that's what you want to go for, mm-hmm. they'll serve up your ad next to the search term. Usually you'll see those paid terms across the top and on the right hand side and the right rail of a search engine results page. And then your organic, or where your SEO comes into play, is the main body of the search engine result page. And that's where you, again, what we've been talking about earlier here today is that so where you modify your site to incorporate keywords in the metadata, the page titles, the page structure, the content, and then any kind of inbound links coming into your site from other people too.
The one interesting way of describing it that I've heard is pay-per-click is almost like renting the space on the search results page, whereas SEO is more like owning it. In other words, you've kind of
proven your worth.
Yeah. and you own that spot, you own that ranking. Whereas on the pay-per-click side, you're bidding for that spot, and it's you basically have to win the bidding war and also have a quality destination for that.
Yeah.
I guess I've always felt that the pay-per-click is kind of the egalitarian way of doing it, though. I mean, when it comes down to it, you have the little guy who's never going to show up on that top 10 page, and he's going to be able to advertise to the people he needs to get to.
If he has a lot of deep pockets for some of those new keywords.
But those are actually relatively cheap. I mean, when you look at it, you're talking about, you know, you can go as low as 5 cents a click, or it can go all the way up to 55, but it really depends on the competitiveness and the narrowness of the audience you're trying to reach and the different keywords you're trying to capture.
Yeah, exactly.
I try to look at it, if you want to use a sports analogy, and I'm a runner, but if you want to look at it, that pay-per-click's kind of like the sprint of the track meet, and the SEO is kind of like the marathon of the track meet. So it takes a while to get listed. It may take a while to get listed by doing SEO. You know, to incorporate all those keywords in there, to have the spider come in and find it, and have build links and do all the appropriate things you need to do, or you can set up a pay-per-click campaign today and be listed to tomorrow. And so it's just different strategies behind the two, but I always look at it as a sprint versus a marathon.
Well, I think going back to what you're saying with the two different approaches, I think they work great, but I don't think they need to be mutually exclusive. I think they work great in concert with one another.
I think that definitely you need to use both of them to help you get your site ranked.
Mm-hmm. And much like the SEO algorithm secrets, there's a lot about the pay-per-click behind the scenes that we don't know. We know there's a lot of factors ranging from your bid, of course, to the competitiveness, to the quality of your site that it's linking to. But again, there's a lot of secrets there that... We know what the factors are, but we don't necessarily know how they're weighted or what's most important.
Yeah,
so that's all part of the game and the part art, part science aspect of this.
And that's never really going to change either.
Right.
I mean, as soon as we figure it out, they're going to change it again. And that's basically been the progression in the complexity of how Google and Yahoo and all those places do what they do. Because it really comes down to, as soon as a web developer figures it out, we can exploit it. So we're trying to avoid that still.
I think the other aspect that we should probably mention here too is with pay-per-click, I think a lot of organizations don't realize that the only time they are charged is when a user clicks. I mean, just for serving up the ad, there's no cost involved there. But when they click your ad, that's when you're paying. Mm-hmm. And so I think a lot of times there's some misunderstandings or misconceptions about that.
Oh, one other thought, just as we talk about sort of Google's options as far as their AdWords program, which is this pay-per-click, they've also started introducing other ways of doing it too, which is a CPM approach, which is just cost per thousand, and mainly aiming that towards their flash ads that they're now serving, the image ads that they're now serving, and basically they're trying to go the more multimedia approach using the same technology that they've already sort of founded their business on. And I think that's going to be really revolutionary as soon as that starts kind of getting off the ground. I know even the most interested people in pay-per-click are not interested in doing a CPM through Google for some reason. And I'm still trying to figure out exactly how to pierce that barrier with the clients that we've been working with.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel that it improves a client's brand if they can be more of a leader in organic versus pay-per-click?
Yeah, I've a lot of some studies that I've read and what I've heard is that, you know, people trust the brands that are listed higher on the organic side of things versus some of the paid per click. You know, the higher your rank on the organic, and the people see that as a trusted brand and a trusted business.
Jason, you provided us with a graphic. It almost looks like a weather radar map. And for the folks listening at home, I'll put a link up so you can watch this while we're talking about it. Can you kind of give us an idea of what we're looking at here? You know, it just basically looks like, you know, where people have clicked and gives people an idea of
yeah, it's a heat map or eye tracking study that a company has done, and they've done this on multiple different types of websites and different things, but it looks like a like you said a weather Doppler radar, and it's showing initial results page of a search engine that shows where people look, and mostly the concentrated in the upper left-hand corner. I call it the Super 7 because it basically incorporates, it looks like a 7 if you look at it, and it will incorporate 7 listings, either if it's pay-per-click or organic, depending upon how what's being served. You'll see, and depending upon the search engine, but you'll see, you know, that's what people are looking at, is the upper left-hand corner, and you want to be number one on this, number one through number three, at least, on the organic or on the pay-per-click side. We'll be number one, too, if they're serving it across the top there.
It's very consistent with other eye tracking studies that you see, too, by Nielsen and others, where there's kind of an F-shaped pattern that we tend to use when we read online, where there's kind of sort of that initial horizontal pass and then another vertical pass, and it's very consistent with the search engine results heat map that Jason referenced here.
Yeah, and you want to be above the fold too, on which was where your monitor cuts off your display. A lot of people won't even scroll down. They'll look at that top, whatever it's on displays in their screens, what they're going to look at, and they're not going to scroll down. However, you know, most of the time, if you're in the top 10, you have a good chance of people seeing your ads or seeing your company displayed there. But very few people click to the next page. I mean, I never do. I'm impatient. I read above the fold. If you're not in the top three, I'm moving on to a different search.
Is that because search has basically gotten better over the years? I mean, you can actually find what you're looking for on page one or page two, and you don't have to go further than that?
I would say there's some specific things that have actually proven that's not the case anymore, that we haven't gotten any better, and that was particularly what Bing's biggest pitch was a lot of research that's been out there that's saying that people aren't necessarily finding what they're looking for.
Okay.
They're searching once, they're not finding it in the top three, they're not finding it in the top 10, and then they're just abandoning the search altogether or trying again with different keywords.
I've even heard a term called search engine fatigue, where you try, users, much like Jason, they may give up, or they may, on the flip side, just try to persist to try to find that little nugget of information, and eventually they give up altogether.
Yeah, I mean, I hardly go past the first page when I'm looking for something. I'll just retype my query in a different way, or you know, add more words. Like I said, you know, maybe I'll go from a 4 keyword query to a 8 keyword query to try to find something that I'm looking for.
Can you talk a little bit about the importance of external links and how that affects results?
External links are links that are inbound or coming to your site are very important. SEO not only is a big popularity game. You want to be popular, which means you want to have a lot of people coming into your site, and you want people that are quality websites linking into your site also. The more credible the site's coming in, and the more the Google or the search engines will give weight to your site for ranking.
And there's a number of different ways to actually look at how many different people are looking at your, or are inbound links to your site. You can certainly fit what the exact tag is, but if you go to any, or just Google terms, you can actually type in a particular query that shows you all the different sites that are shooting links towards you, so you have some idea of who those people are. Or if you want to go a more simplistic route, you can download Google Toolbar and see what your page rank is. Page rank is actually purely the importance that Google has lent your page on a scale from 1 to 10 based on the quality of the links that are coming in and the number of links that are coming.
Yeah, that query is link : www. Whatever your site is .com.
That's the big thing about linking, though, is the credibility factor, and you want a mix of quality and quantity.
Yeah, again, it's a popularity game, and the more you have coming in, the more Google sees you as a credible site and thinks that your content is relevant for the user, and the better they'll give you a page rank. A lot of things go into that page rank. Links in is one of them, but there's a lot of other, again, another algorithm that Google uses to rank things, and they're not going to let you know how they use it, but the higher your page rank, as given by Google, the better you're going to display on the search engine results page.
Outbound links make a difference as well?
Somewhat. You don't want to have too many outbound links going out. If you do, you want to make sure it's to other relevant content or something that's related to your site. You don't want to be linking from a shoes site to a site that promotes ATVs if it does no relevancy to them. We also want to make sure you have a good quality interlinking within your site. All your links and all your pages are linked together through a sitemap or other navigational links, because spiders use links to get around. So if they're coming from your page to my page, and then once they're on my page, you don't want them to hit one, like say home page, and have an outbound link and have them skip off again for them to index it. So we want to make sure once they get into your site, they're crawling around and they're detecting all the links in the site, and they're indexing all those pages in your site. So because the more pages you have indexed by the spiders and the search engines, the better chance you are going to get found out there by the users with the queries they're using.
And writing quality links is a big aspect of that too. If you can work in keywords into those internal links, so if you're linking to another product page, reference the product in your link rather than just a simple click here or any opportunity to work in those keywords is going to benefit you.
Yeah, that goes back to the anchor and alt text that Nick was talking about earlier, the anchor text, because a lot of, again, going back to basic SEO 101, mm-hmm. You'll see a lot of links that will say, like Dean said, click here or for more information. You know, that doesn't describe anything for the spider, so you want to use keywords in your alt tags and your anchor text.
And also that title tag within the anchor tag. Just a small little bit inside there that gives a different definition for if you are really limited to just using the word here, you can say exactly what that means.
Exactly.
Right. Of the best practices that you guys use on a daily basis, what are a couple of the most favorite ones that seem to give you the most results?
I'd say the biggest thing. I mean, I come from a web design and art direction background, so my biggest thing that I have to be sure of is that the majority of the text that I'm putting there, once again, is parsable, so that the search engine can actually read it, and then I'm not forcing them to put different things into images or different words that might be keyword that we want to push, for example, that we make sure that those things are indexable and that we don't end up having to shove that into an image just so that the layout works.
I'd say, a couple things. One is just to be sure to research keyword variations. You may find that there's common acronyms in your industry, or you even have terms like sport utility vehicle versus SUV. Just researching those variations and how frequently they're searched, and if the search volume is appear to be higher for one variation, that should be the term that you use most often for optimization. And I think the other key is to make sure that the keywords you've identified are being searched, are actually being searched, and they're not just ones that your organization thinks they should be ranked for.
Yeah, that's a very important point. People may be looking for a checking account, but they may not be looking for free checking or personal checking.
And I was going to say, I come from a banking background, and that's a great example where every bank tries to position themselves as being a financial services provider, when in reality we all call them our bank. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, and that's the thing when choosing keywords. You want to make sure that you're choosing what people are actually searching for, not what you think is the marketing terminology that you want to use. So sometimes it's tough to get that mindset, your mind wrapped around that, because you want to use your marketing positioning and your marketing strategy and your marketing speak, but yet people aren't looking for that. They're looking for what they, they're looking for banks, not financial institutions.
And on the flip side of that, you also need to have those be an obtainable, low-hanging fruit are definitely the best way to start with SEO. I mean, if you try and attack bank, you're probably not going to get on that front page unless you're, already established as one of the top 10 in the nation. But I think a lot of times just associating those ones that are being searched but aren't necessarily saturated with giant leaders that you can't compare yourself with or can't compete with, I think that's also an interesting sort of a balancing act that you have to establish.
Yeah, and then taking those keywords on and then putting them in the proper places throughout the website is the best practice that, once you have those keywords, it's great. Once you find them, make sure you use them correctly.
Nick, I want to turn to you now. We talked a lot about what are some of the best practices and things that we want to encourage developers to do to help improve their rankings. What are some of the pitfalls? What are things that you just absolutely want to avoid?
There's basically two different categories as I see it. There'd be the legacy coding, the archaic coding that we're no longer allowed to do as far as Google and Yahoo are concerned. And then there's also the legacy ways of trying to trick the search engines that now if we get caught doing, we get pinged big time. When we go back to what we used to be able to do in the past as far as coding, we used to be able to use tables, but now we're kind of pinged a little bit on that so that we lower our score a little bit if we're shown doing tables excessively. A lot of times we used to shove everything into images rather than actually having them parsable by text. We used to be able to do quite a few different things, such as splash pages that would that currently lower our ranking, or pages that automatically forward to another page, duplicate pages, those types of things that were all meant to be perfectly fine, that were all meant to be a way of enhancing a site or a way of hacking a problem. But now those are all getting picked up by Google as a detrimental element of your website, so we got to be aware of those. On the other end of things, there's the people who are doing these things on purpose, who are putting those keywords right in the bottom of the page there, but giving them the same color as the background color, so no one would see them unless they scrolled over and actually selected all that text.
Okay.
Right now, Google will pick up on that. MSN will pick up on that. There's a lot of other things like that where it's false forwarding, anything, duplicate pages, once again, has been done maliciously as well. And just a number of different ways where anytime you're trying to get around of it, if you feel like you wouldn't be willing to admit that you're doing it on your website, you probably shouldn't be doing it on your website. And more importantly, the search engines already know that you've been doing it on your website.
Okay. Jason, you were talking to Dean a little while ago about, you know, when you write content for these sites, it's almost an art form. Dean, what are some of the things you like to incorporate when you write content for a site?
Yeah, well, there's really a balance of incorporating a lot of SEO practices versus just writing quality, natural-sounding content. We talked earlier about some of those fundamentals with title tags and meta descriptions and everything, and on the main page itself, it always helps to incorporate keywords into your lead paragraph and into your headline on the page and some of those factors. At the same time, the risk here is making the contents sound or read unnaturally and making it sound like you're just incorporating keywords for the sake of incorporating keywords. So a lot of it is just making sure that you still make your copy read very naturally, read very easily, make it scannable, having enough content in there to be indexed by search engines, but also not doing anything that detracts from the user experience along the way.
Kind of going along with that, I think goes down just having a website that people want to visit.
Exactly.
And one of the things that caused a lot of problems when Obama used YouTube as a primary way of sort of promoting his message was that every time that you go to certain websites that Google owns, Google's actually going to tag you with this cookie that's going to report back to it and tell you where you are. So it can actually tell how many people have gone to a certain website based on its small sort of sample. And it can also tell you, or also can tell how many times they visited, how many times they repeated, all these different elements so you can actually see the popularity of a website in a way that a lot of people aren't aware of. So it really comes down to what Dean was saying, is writing content that's not purely search engine driven. It's got to be something that people are interested in. You got to be talking about a topic that they're interested in. You got to be writing about it interestingly.
And giving them a reason to come back to your site.
Exactly.
Blogs aren't a silver bullet for SEO, but at the same time, they generate a lot of traffic, which in turn, you know, has a lot of SEO benefits in the long run too. So whether anything you can do to repeat, encourage repeat visits and just really become a trusted authority and a quality authority for content and that's relevant to your organization is definitely going to enhance your SEO potential in the long run.
Another element we haven't really got a chance to talk about yet would be the fact that updating your content regularly, making your website be something that's going to be constantly updated, that's going to have relevance time and time again. Most often you see this with news sites, but oftentimes you're going to see it with websites that have blogs on them. Sundog.net, for example, has a blog on it as a front page. But that's not by accident. That's partially for SEO reasons as well as sort of a dissemination of information. Keeping your website constantly updated is going to be one of the quickest and easiest ways that Google can say that your website is live and not dead, that it's something that somebody's going to be interested in time and time again and should show up at the top because it's going to be relevant because it's been updated recently.
Yeah, and search engines definitely like to see new, fresh content. They don't want to see, like you said, a dead site. They want to see something that's being active and actively managed. And then another thing, too, with search engine optimization, if you want to just do the basics of it, you know, once you establish the SEO and you start it out, and you do all the things you wanted to do, then you're not done there. You need to constantly go back and measure yourself, rank yourself against your competitors and everything else, and look at what's going on in the world. And you, hopefully, after your first initial SEO, your optimization, you move your rankings up and continue to monitor. If you see yourself slipping back down again, that could be some multiple different reasons. Your competitors are tweaking their site to rank higher, and which everybody is trying to do is always consistently optimize their site. The search engines have changed their algorithm. So SEO, once you do it once, you're not just done. You need to keep consistently monitoring and looking at what's going on, and then consistently tweaking your site to find maybe it's new keywords or adjustment of the keywords or placing them in a different spot on the page, or you know, just going back to the basics all over again and starting up, and so you get better rankings. And that's very important, is that continuous analysis and monitoring of your rankings out there.
And it all takes time. I mean, progress in SEO is measured in weeks and months. And
like I said, the sprint versus the marathon.
You know, optimizing your site is not going to translate into overnight changes in your rankings necessarily. It's all a process, and it all takes time.
Yeah, when I was doing SEO consulting, it was very much a quarterly report, expecting very minor gains at first, but a result after a year, or a second result after 2 years. Mm-hmm. It was very much a long-term contract.
Yeah, you're looking, you know, if you start, you know, taking a site with nothing, and you're looking at least, you know, 6 months to really start seeing some good results.
Mm-hmm. I'm assuming social media sites is really the big moving target when it comes to the SEO right now.
Yeah, because there is the opportunity for people to link into your site or for other places, people to say, hey, you know, here's a tweet, and then here's a link back to your site. And the more links coming into your site, the more popular you are, mm-hmm. the better your chances of being ranked higher up in the SEO results or the search engine results pages. So social media out there with people sharing links and everything else with blogs, if you're linked out of somebody else's blog to really highly trafficked and read, or other people's Facebook or whatever, and the social media aspect is really another whole podcast you could do on that, as far as how it helps in SEO and everything else.
Yeah, and you mentioned the high ranking blogs, and I think what people don't also realize about things like LinkedIn, Facebook, MySpace, those are already as highly ranked as you possibly can be. So a lot of times those things, or those links that are coming off of those, are being ranked with such weight that you don't really realize that a Facebook movement can be enough to move your thing several pages ahead in Google rankings.
No, most definitely.
Okay, there's our tease for part two of the show right there.
There you go.
Homework for everyone, social right. media and SEO. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today. If you at home have any questions for the panelists here at Sundog, you can send an email to thepodcast@sundog.net. For Jason, Dean, and Nick, I'm Lon Keller, and we'll catch you next time on Sundog, the podcast.